us. Grant us this week your abiding love and presence and all that we need to be effective senators. May we never doubt your love and hand is leading us, and may we do all things with concern and courage and love that is required of us. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Barnetts, Bartle, Bray, Callahan, Champion, Clemens, Crowell, Cunningham, Days, Dempsey, Engler, Goodman, Green, Griesheimer, Justice, Keviny, Lager, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Nodler, Hearst, Ferguson, Ridgway, Roop, Schaefer, Schmidt, Scott, Shields, Schumacher, Stouffer, Vogel, Wilson, Wright Jones.
The quorum being present, the Senate is in session. Madam Secretary, please read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, second regular session, 65th day, Thursday, May 6, 2010.
Senator from St. Francis.
Mr. President, I move the further reading of the journal to be dispensed with and the same be approved as having been fully read.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have approved that motion. Senator from St. Francis.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I inquire the senator from the first real briefly?
The senator from the first, do you yield?
I do, Mr. President.
Senator, I know we can't do introductions. We passed that time that we can actually introduce any groups or people, but when I was coming in, I said hi to a group from St. Louis, a Christian school, I believe, in St. Louis. Isn't that in your district?
Yes, it is, Senator.
What school is that?
Green Park Christian School.
Green Park Christian School. Even though we can't announce that they're here today, I thought you would, I'm sure you knew it, but I didn't know if you knew that they were up there already in the gallery.
Well, I
so
did.
So we welcome here today.
Thank you, Senator. Appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from the first, for what purpose do you rise? I'm sorry, were you seeking? Okay, all right, thank you. Under order of business, petitions, memorials, and remonstrances. Senator from Webster, for what purpose do you rise?
To speak on a point of personal privilege.
Senator Webster from Webster would like to speak on a point of personal privilege. Proceed.
Mr. President, you know, this is Monday, the last Monday that I will be a senator in this legislature. No, not unless we have a special. But Mr. President, you know, in 1929, the stock market crashed, right? And there was a term for that. Wasn't my fault. And today, the stock market opened up 400 points. But it closed up 340, which was great, too. All right? And I always like to say the difference between a problem and opportunity is a point of view. So here we are. And even though this is my last Monday in regular session, in the state legislature, as a senator in the state of Missouri, and it saddens me, per my dress, I'm in mourning. That's exactly right. And so, Mr. President, I thank you for this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator from Westminster. Petitions, memorials, and remonstrances. Resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Senator from St. Francis.
Would you recognize the senator from the 15th for a privilege motion?
Senator from the 15th.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate refuse to concur with the House Committee substitute for the Senate Committee substitute for Senate Bill 842, 799, and 809 and request the House to recede from its position or, failing to do so, grant the Senate a conference thereon.
You've heard the motion from the senator from the 15th. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from Cape Girardeau, for what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the senator from the 15th.
Does the senator yield? He does. Proceed.
Thank you for yielding. Senator, you're sending a bill to conference. If you could just explain to us briefly what the underlying bill is.
Yeah, I wish I would have brought out my my summary of all the amendments that went on in the House, but
I know one of them was a tax increase.
According to Linda Lubrin.
That really conservative place of harboring no taxes, cut the budget, they sent us a tax increase.
Right, so we had the underlying bill, which was simple. We passed out here several times. Your language, my language, the Senator from Lawrence.
Payer of last resort.
Exactly. It was probably a net savings of $7 million. There is also on there, there's a parity for some other folks for reimbursement under MoHealthNet.
Sure.
There is a the 2% managed care, which I think is what you're referring to.
That's the tax increase.
That's the one.
Yeah.
There's an in-home component to that. There is some information to be distributed to schools for SCHIP. There's a couple other provisions.
Have we, because we dealt with, and I know the senator from the 10th, I don't know if her language, we dealt with that on what was going to be mandatory and what was not and how much extra money that was going to be.
Right.
I know that didn't make it out of the chamber. I don't know. If we could continue those discussions, I would like your assistance in maybe serving on conference to help you with the payer of last resort. That's our bill together, our language that we've worked out with that, fight off those tax increases. And I do know that we have some issues with the senator from the 10th's language on what that unfunded mandate, if that's the identical language she offered or they've somehow amended it differently in the House. So. I don't know if you have any objections, but I would request to try to be on conference.
You're putting me on the spot, Senator, here on stage.
No, yeah, exactly.
I think you'd be great on the conference committee. In fact, you and I have already had some conversations about this and have
I appreciate it.
Similar opinions on a lot of these amendments. I think
Wonderful.
It'd be great.
All right. Thanks very much, Senator.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion. Senator from the 11th, what purpose do you rise?
May I inquire briefly of the Senator from 15th?
Senator, you?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you for yielding, Senator. I heard some of your discussion with the senator from Cape. The underlying bill is what?
The underlying bill was under current law, MoHealthNet has a pretty tight window to make a claim. If someone has private health insurance, they only have about 60 to 90 days currently to recoup those taxpayer dollars if that individual actually has private health insurance. So we were opening up that window for 3 years. To allow the greatest amount of recapture of those taxpayer dollars. I think the benefit was about $7 million a year. We passed it out of here 34 to nothing, and then, of course, it got loaded up. And I think some of the language from the Senator from the 23rds is on there, and then the House had their own amendments as well.
Now, there was a amendment by the Senator from the 10th. Was that correct?
Yes. And I don't know offhand if those were identical, but there was a provision in the House that was added as an amendment that required school districts to give information about SCHIP eligibility. And I don't know if that was identical what the senator from the 10th says, but that was added as an amendment on the House side. So
I'm not attempting to tie your hands in conference, but is it your intent, obviously, to largely go back to what the original bills were?
I think that'd be, what I'd like to do is go back to the original intent. To get what we can get out of whatever amendments were offered that save money. And try and have a bill that we can actually pass, because if the bill dies, we don't realize any savings. So
thank you for the inquiry, Senator.
Thanks.
Further discussion. Further discussion? Seeing none, the senator is recognized to close.
Close.
The senator from the 15th moves that the Senate refuse to concur in sitting committee substitute for Senate Bills 842, 799, and 809 to Senate Bill number 842 and request the House receive from its position and failing to do so grant the Senate a conference thereon. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have passed the privilege motion. Senator from St. Francis.
Mr. President, could you recognize the senator from Stoddard for a privilege motion?
Senator from Stoddard.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a privileged motion.
State your privileged motion.
Mr. President, I move that the conferees for Senate Bill 605 be allowed to exceed the differences on Senate Bill 605. And what's going on here, Mr. President, is that we have a couple of issues. A county classification bill is what 605 was originally contained, and we need to add an emergency clause to section 48.030 because there's an emergency clause in section 48.020, and so obviously this would keep the provisions consistent with one another.
You've heard the motion from the senator from Stoddard. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from Holt. For what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the senator from Stoddard.
The senator yield?
Yes.
He does.
See,
proceed.
From Holder, from Andrew.
Bradley. One of 16, my friend.
Pardon?
Pick any of the 16 counties.
Wow.
I'll be happy to
several
answer.
Residences, I bet, in that district, don't you?
I would assume. 167,000 people.
I meant you personally.
Oh, no.
Probably have
one.
Two or three homes in the
one.
District.
One on wheels. I just pull it to whatever county I want to be in. I just want to make sure I clarify the... The reason to exceed the differences is just for the emergency clause?
Well, actually, there's another provision that deals with a gratuity exemption. The House Amendment 3 failed to exempt gratuity from state sales tax. This is a provision that the senator from Buchanan has in language in Senate Bill 944. And so
okay. We
want to include an exemption from sales state sales tax for gratuities.
So we're gonna include the exemption and we're gonna add an emergency clause.
That's correct.
And that should be all we need to do.
That's all we need to do, Senator.
All right.
Are you with me on this one?
I got you covered. I'm
appreciate
with you, my friend.
It, Senator.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion. Senator from Cape Girardeau, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President, to inquire the senator from Stoddard.
Senator Yeom?
Certainly.
He does. Proceed.
Have we narrowed your motion to exceed the differences, or are you just saying that's the only area in which you want to exceed the differences?
That's the only two areas that I want to exceed the differences in, those two provisions.
Okay, and that's fair enough. We just got to watch all of that as we start going in here and exceeding differences that we don't have brand new bills that materialize. And I understand the need for the emergency clause, because part of that is to prevent Butler County from actually having to have a race for auditor, and if we don't have an emergency clause, the primary is going to occur before the effective date of the statute.
That's right. I guess the effective date is what, August 28th of this year?
Yeah, so I understand all of that. There is one area, since we are exceeding the differences, I shared this with you earlier. As the appropriations chair, I read an interesting article today that Amtrak is going to start giving away Cardinal baseball tickets and Royals baseball tickets to help drive up ridership. Now, I don't understand how everyone, that lobbies for Amtrak funding can defend the fact, if these are actual taxpayer dollars, that are paying for hotel rooms and baseball tickets as we make cuts to other areas of state government. Now, I haven't been able to get the actual data yet, but I think it's quite shameful if we're using taxpayer subsidization of Amtrak to pay for baseball tickets and hotel rooms, somehow creating a lottery to increase ridership back and forth. So I'm going to remember this as we go into the budget situation next year, and really hope that you all on approach can get to the bottom of where those funds have come from.
I agree with
you. Donated, that's great. I'd just like them to know that they've been donated to Amtrak and MoDOT. But if we're using taxpayer dollars to do that, I think we gave them too much money.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion? Seeing none, senators recognize the close.
I close.
The senator from Stoddard moves that conferees be allowed to exceed the differences on the House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 605. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have passed that motion. Senator from St. Francis.
Mr. President, do we have messages from the governor? Could you have those printed in the journal?
We do have messages from the governor, and they will be printed in the journal.
Senator from Buchanan is, I think so.
Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan.
We inquire, are those withdrawals?
Yes, they are.
I would move that those withdrawals be returned to the governor. Does that make sense?
Senator from Buchanan has moved that the names be sent back to the governor. Is there any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, the senators recognize the close.
Close.
Senator from Buchanan closes. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have passed that motion. Senator from St. Francis.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, do we have messages from the House?
Yes, we do. Madam Secretary, would you please read the messages from the House?
Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has adopted Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2016 and has taken up and passed Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2016. Also, the Speaker has appointed the following conference committee to act with a like committee from the Senate on House Committee Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 754 as amended. Representatives Day, Wells, Wasson, Daugherty, and Webb. Also, the Speaker has appointed the following conference committee to act with a like committee from the Senate on House Committee Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 733 as amended. Representatives Kingerly, Thompson, Hobbs, Schemel, and Shoup. Also, the Speaker has appointed the following conference committee to act with a like committee from the Senate on House Committee Substitute for Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 605 as amended. Representatives Stevenson, Jones of the 89th, Brown of the 30th, Kustner, and Quinn. Also, the House has taken up and passed House Committee Substitute Number 2 for Senate Bill 844. An act relating to ethical administration of public institutions and officials, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Respectfully, Daniel Adam Crumless, Chief Clerk.
Senator from St. Francis.
Thank you, Mr. President. Could you take us the order of business of reports from standing committees, and if you would recognize the Senator from Howell for his report.
Senator from Howell.
Yes, Mr. President, your Committee on Governmental Accountability and Fiscal Oversight has a report.
Please send the report forward. Okay. Madam Secretary, please read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Governmental Accountability and Fiscal Oversight, to which was referred House Committee Substitute for House Bills 1695, 1742, and 1674 with Senate Committee Substitute, recommends that the bill do pass. Also, House Bill 2252 recommends that the bill do pass. Respectfully, Senator Pergerson, Chairman.
Senator from St. Francis.
Thank you, Mr. President. Could you take us to the order of business of House bills on the formal calendar for third read? House bills, third read, formal calendar. I think the Senator from Boone has a bill that was just turned in from that committee.
House bills on third reading, the formal calendar. House committee substitute for House Bill 1695, 1742, and 1674 was Senate Committee Substitute. Senator from Boone.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1695, 1742, and 1674 with Senate Committee Substitute be brought for the body, before the body, for third reading and final passage.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Boone.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a Senate Substitute.
We need to do the adoption of the Senate Committee Substitute first.
Okay. Mr. President, I'd move for the adoption of the Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bills 1695, 1742, and 1674.
The Senator from Boone moves the adoption of Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bills 1695, 1742, and 1674.
And I do have a floor substitute.
Okay, now would you send the floor substitute
there
forward?
There you go.
Okay, has it been distributed?
No, it has not. I don't believe it has. Has it been distributed? Senate. Yes, it has been.
It has been. Are you asking for a waiver of the reading?
I'm asking for a waiver of the reading and move for the adoption.
Okay. And then, you're asking for the adoption of the Senate substitute then?
Yes, Mr. President.
Okay, Senator from Boone, would you care to explain the Senate substitute?
Yeah, this is the House DWI bill. Basically, what the Senate committee substitute, the underlying Senate committee substitute did, we took those things out of the Senate bill, which was Senate Bill 880, which we had on the floor for a while. We had some court fees, additional court fees that I know some of the senators have an objection to and a few other things. We cleaned that up in the Senate committee substitute, and then what we're doing with the Senate substitute is basically just cleaning up some language without a lot of substantive changes. But basically, this is the DWI bill. It incorporates all those things that we've been discussing. In large part, it expands the discretion of the circuit court to put people into DWI and substance abuse programs and have some discretion over giving them their licenses back as an incentive to stay in those programs. If you get a second, if you've got two previous DWIs, you are no longer permitted to go to municipal court. You must go to circuit court. It has all those things from the underlying bills. What we've done, though, is we've taken out the court fees that were in 880. Simply, we leave that now to the discretion of the circuit court to tax onto the defendants the cost of those programs. It still has what the underlying Senate, or the, what Senate Bill 880 had in the underlying House bill, which is the mandatory reporting requirements, which would allow both the municipal courts and the circuit courts to now have access to information on who has previous DWIs. It bumps up the mandatory jail time for a persistent offender from 10 days to 30 days. And other than that, it's pretty much the same, Mr. President.
Does any senator desire to be heard on that? Senator from the 11th, for what purpose do you rise?
May I inquire of the Senator from Boone?
Senator from Boone, yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, I'm sorry. There was a little bit of noise in the chamber, and the Senate substitute departs from the Senate committee substitute. The Senate substitute was really what we had in Senate Bill 888. Was that correct?
880.
And
well, it was the Senate substitute was 880 after we took out some of the things that were objectionable.
And the document we're working off clearly is 14F. Is that correct?
Yes, 14F.
Okay. All right. And walk through me just briefly. The Senate substitute took out the court fee part. Is that correct of what we previously had?
Yeah, that's right. Because we initially had put in a $500 court fee and assessment to help pay for the drug court program. But essentially what we're doing now is codifying what the circuit courts already do, which is we leave it to the discretion of the circuit court to assess to the defendants the cost of ankle bracelets, the cost of the programs, and other things. That's what they're already doing.
Okay. And who pays for what without the court fees?
Well, in addition to what we allot them through the appropriations process, it's paid for by fees.
So the state
taxed to the defendants.
So in lieu of court fees, the state would be paying for the creation of these DWI courts, is that correct?
Well, yes, basically, because somebody's got to pay for it. But what they do now is, in addition to the money that we give them for DWI courts, they assess costs to the defendants. We make it clear in here that the circuit court has that ability to assess those costs to the individual defendants.
Okay, and we largely pay for that ability, right, by appropriation?
Well, we pay for some of it through appropriation, but the rest of it will be paid for by basically an assessment onto the defendants. For whatever,
right.
Whether it goes to, you know, if they need an ankle bracelet, then, you know, the cost of that is assessed to the defendant.
Okay. And the DWI docket would largely be a new creation in the state?
Well, remember, some courts have it. What we do is we do specify who's eligible and who's not eligible in here.
And it would work, and coming from Jackson County, it would work very similarly
to what
I might recognize as drug court?
Exactly.
Okay.
And we do have a senator from the 10th language in here that creates the for the DWI court ability for the Circuit Court of Jackson County. all those previous items, again, which we discussed in the context of Senate Bill 880, are in here.
Okay. We're not taking anybody's blood in this, are we?
Nope. The warrantless blood draw is removed.
Yes. Well, there was a discussion about that, and I was a little bit concerned. I knew that we...
Nope. Not in here. As it was not in 880 either.
Right.
It was initially in the House bill, but we took it over. We took that out in the Senate committee substitute.
Right. That was the involuntary...
Yeah, that was the involuntary warrantless blood draw.
The vampire amendment.
The vampire amendment, as it was commonly referred to, yes.
Okay. Now, briefly, Senator, compared to the status quo, we have a couple of provisions I'd like to go over so I fully understand.
Sure.
Municipal court now, and what happens under your Senate substitute if it becomes law, how do we change municipal court and DWI law?
Well, as far as the municipal courts go, there's really no limitation right now on how many repeat DWIs a municipal court can hear. The one thing that this does do is if you have two previous, you must go to circuit court.
Okay, so in the status quo, theoretically, somebody could have five DWIs at some point and still go to municipal court. You're saying now it's two. You put in a limit of two.
That's okay. Correct. And keep in mind, for example, Boone County, which is my home county, already, our municipal courts only hear the first DWI, and subsequent to the first one, they already send them to circuit court, and a lot of places do that. But this gets back to what precipitated a lot of this change, which was what the governor pointed out in the fall, which was we did have some municipalities in the state that were basically using DWIs as a money-making venture to hand out suspended imposition of sentences, and they would just keep taking them and keep taking them as long as you had the ability to pay for a suspended imposition of sentence. And then if you got probation and completed your probation, it really didn't show up on your record.
Well, I'll just tell you from what the work that you and the Senator from the 8th and others and the Senator from 10th have done, my concern in January was that we were, with the long arm of the legislature, overreacting to something that probably systematically could be handled. And it looked like you had things that very maturely handled this problem without overreacting. And, you know, way too often we overreact to some things and we pass things that sound good, but that they don't, in reality, they send a couple of thousand more people to prison. And
right.
So I just, anyway, I just wanted to understand.
Well, that's correct, Senator. And, you know, initially it was in the governor's proposal as well. There was a whole laundry list of cases that would no longer be allowed to go to the municipal court. They would all have to go to the circuit court. That was if you had above a 0.15 blood alcohol content. If you had, I think at that point it was one previous DWI, somebody was injured as a result of an accident you caused by under the influence. There's a whole laundry list, but what that led to was a substantially higher fiscal note,
right,
which we had to deal with earlier in this process, because right now, and I'll give you again a good example from Boone County, we've got about 1,200 DWIs annually in Boone County, and about 600 of those go to the municipal court, and about 600 go to the circuit court. And what that kind of initial incarnation of this bill, what would have happened is we would have shifted almost all of those, with the exception of just a few, to the circuit court. And because we pay for the circuit courts and not the municipal courts, it would have added a substantial amount onto the fiscal note. Since we pared that back to just basically if you have two previous DWIs, now you go to circuit court. That's pretty much what is already occurring anyway.
Well, I'm in, just for whatever it's worth, I'm in complete agreement. Now the refusal docket is untouched, Senator?
I'm sorry, Senator, I couldn't hear you.
The refusal docket is untouched. I mean, we didn't deal with the refusal docket.
Refusal docket. I'm not sure what you're talking about, Senator.
Well, the person of whether you have the right to refuse. I mean, there was some early talk.
Yeah, well,
about...
we have removed both the House bill and the Senate bill, removed the language where currently, if there's probable cause to believe it's driving under the influence and the officer requests that you take a test, you could deny that test, and the language in the statute said no further test shall be given. That language is being removed from the existing law. And what that would mean is, because we've taken out the language for the warrantless blood draw, it would be within the purview of the police to seek a warrant for a blood draw.
Okay. Okay,
because right now it says no further test shall be given, and that's really led to some confusion as to what that really means.
Right. So what would we still technically have a refusal that do they have? I mean, there's obviously a criminal downside to refusing the test.
That stays the same.
What's that?
That stays
the same.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. But we do give some additional discretion to the circuit court to give a license back on a limited basis as an incentive mechanism to keep somebody in a drug treatment program.
Right.
Because, okay, again, what we've got now is, you know, it's kind of draconian. Either you get your license back or you don't get your license back. And if you don't get it back, what ends up happening is, you know, the defendant continues to drive drunk, they drive without a license, and they drive without insurance. You know, and after discussing it with the courts, giving the courts the ability, once somebody is in a program, and again, that could only start 45 days after they're into the program, but once they're into the program, the court would have more discretion to give them their license back on a limited basis, for example, for driving to work and things like that, as an incentive to keep them into the program.
That, so is that commonly called the hardship license or some sort?
Well, it is, and that, you know, that exists to a certain extent now, but this changes that a little bit to give the court more discretion to do that.
One last question. The first time offender, did we change the blood alcohol from the status quo?
No, 0.08.
18-year-old kid, I mean, is there a more severe penalty for,
no,
or is that current law, just a restatement?
No, that stays at current law. So but on a first time,
as I recall, is that 0.15? If they're over that?
If they're over a 0.15, even on the first one, that is one threshold element that makes you eligible for DWI court.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Further discussion. Senator from Cape Girardeau, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. To inquire the senator from Boone.
Senator from Boone, yield?
Yes, I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you for yielding, Senator. Just so I make sure the copy that I've got of your Senate substitute, it ends in 0.14F. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. If I could, and I appreciate the dialogue that you had with the senator from the 11th, but I just want to kind of flip through a couple of these, if you could, and explain to me the wisdom of the committee and your work in this group or whatever of prosecutors and whatnot on the addition of that.
I will try as best I can, Senator.
I appreciate that. Now, originally, and this is just my understanding, so please correct me if I'm wrong. Originally, the whole call to do reforms with Missouri's DWI laws was because the Post-Dispatch exposed prosecutors in St. Louis City and St. Louis County that were continuing to give SISs and not reporting those to the state databases. Is that my understanding?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. So are we doing anything in this bill that will change that?
Sure. We've got, okay, there are several provisions. Number one, it's mandatory reporting,
okay,
by the municipalities and law enforcement.
Okay.
So that will go into the highway patrol system so that everyone will have access to that information, because the lack of reporting was a real problem, especially on the municipals. You get a municipal DWI and it wouldn't be reported,
right,
anywhere.
So right,
that is addressed here. Also, you cannot get an SIS even on your first one if you have above a 0.15 unless you successfully complete the drug court program. So you don't get to...
What happens if we don't have a drug court program? Where I'm at, do you see equal protection issues?
No, I mean...
If the state provides you in Boone County a drug court and you have an ability to get an SIS under the color of law, and Cape does not have a drug court, Cape County does not have a drug court, I do not have that opportunity to get an SIS, is the law somehow treating...
No, I don't believe so, because, I mean, the court has the ability to establish if they want, and we broaden the ability of any court, basically.
Yeah, but me as a citizen, I don't have that right. My right to get an SIS, then,
right,
is not prosecutorial discretion, where I would have the ability to then say that the prosecutor's awarding of SISs is arbitrary and capricious prosecutorial misconduct. My questions are, unless we're going to backdoor fund all of these, do we run the risk of getting a constitutional argument?
I don't believe so. I mean, we can establish in state law, if you blow a 0.15, you are no longer eligible for an SIS. If you happen to be in a jurisdiction, and it really has nothing to do with the jurisdiction where you live, it's wherever you get the DWI, if that option is available, you can avail yourself of that option. But if they don't have it, then that's not an option. But I do not think that's either a privileges and immunities or an equal protection problem.
Well, do you have a problem then if we put a provision in here that says if that's deemed unconstitutional, that whole provision goes away? I, what I don't
I,
want...
I,
What I don't want is some court being able to read this and be able to then say that because we have this in state statute, right, we are now having to put drug courts at a court-ordered expense, yes, of 114 of them deployed in every county, or for that matter, every judicial
court. I don't think that's a problem,
court.
But I don't have a problem with that language. Because okay, I don't think it's unconstitutional, but if it's found unconstitutional, then so be it. We'll come back and readdress it. But I wouldn't have a problem with that language.
Well, I understand how you've dealt with that, but if you could explain to me, by putting that on there, how does that 1.5, you can't have a SIS unless you go to a drug court, how does that stop municipalities who are just got an SIS factory rolling through it?
Well, because number one, if you have two previous, then you're no longer, you can't be in municipal court any longer. At that point, you do have to go to circuit court.
So we're taking that out of the purview of a city court.
Yes.
Now, and we're saying you have to be prosecuted in a county court.
If you have two previous.
And what's the logic of that?
Because essentially, you know, anybody who's got two previous has demonstrated that they are a substantial threat to public safety. And
why not just shoot them?
Because that would be an equal protection problem, I think,
okay,
and a due process problem if we went that route.
So how about the third one? Can we just shoot them if they get three? Would that work?
It's a little closer, but I think there's still a constitutional infirmity in that.
Okay. Well, I'm just checking. So you're saying you get the first one and you blow over a 1.5, the legal limit is 0.08, but if you blow over a 0.15, then you can't get an SIS unless you go to a drug court.
Successfully complete.
Successfully complete. So, in essence, you are getting rid of a suspended imposition. You're just making it an SES, a suspended execution of sentence, instead of a suspended imposition.
Yeah, you could look at it like that.
So,
you could still have a suspended imposition because sentence would not be imposed. Because successfully completing drug court could be a term of your probation. And if you successfully complete that, then you would not be sentenced. The sentence would never be imposed. So you'd still have an SIS.
Well, in order to get you and legally require you to complete that course, you've got to have some jurisdictional tie.
Yeah, but you could make that a term of probation.
Well, but probation, you would revoke the probation. And then you would move that forward, I guess. I mean, I think it's a semantics. I don't know how you would do a suspended imposition of sentence.
Because you're only sentenced when you are sentenced to a term of incarceration.
Okay.
And so you wouldn't be sentenced to incarceration. A term of your probation would be you would not be sentenced to incarceration if you would successfully complete drug court.
Okay, but regardless of that, we're not going to be able to do that if you blow 0.15. Now, how many jurisdictions actually have drug courts?
I don't know. Senator, I don't know the exact number.
Okay. I'm not aware of one in Southeast Missouri, a DWI court. So
I don't know.
I mean, and I'm talking all of the 8th Congressional District. I know that we have a former representative, Phil Britt, who in former Senator Sharp's court got the drug court commissioner job down there, but I'm not aware of any DWI courts, as I understand it, and I'm going to ask the senator from the 10th. I think Jackson County's got one and Boone County's got one.
Green County's got one?
Uh-huh. Okay. So in order to fix a St. Louis County and city problem, we're going to basically say if you blow over a 1.5, you can no longer get an SIS.
Well, Senator, I would disagree with you on categorizing this as fixing a St. Louis County problem. I think what the governor pointed out with some of the more abusive practices we are seeing, which happened to be pointed out in the Post-Dispatch, is that there is a statewide public safety problem. And really what this bill attempts to do is address a statewide public safety problem as opposed to just be a response to somebody that was in the Post-Dispatch.
Let's talk about that, because the group that got together and came up with all of these recommendations, as I understood it, was mostly just a bunch of prosecutors.
Well, and again, I certainly wasn't part of that group. You know, I didn't know about that group until I saw it on the news.
Sure.
And I don't, you know, there may be, by coincidence, things in this bill that came out of what that committee looked at. But as far as I know, I certainly wasn't part of that. I don't know if the senator from the 10th was. She had a
Well, and I appreciate that.
And I don't know that the representative who sponsored this in the House was part of that group either.
And I appreciate that from that perspective, because I think, as the senator from the 8th have shown on different, you know, the prosecutors have got a round peg and a hammer that they want to jam, and that's called just lock them up. No matter what, it seems to be that's their solution to everything, and make it, you know, more difficult. If this is where I wanted to get your perspective, why not just say, if you've had a DWI, you put an interlock device on every vehicle, and you have to blow into an interlock device to start your vehicle. And you, if you want to drive, if you want the privilege to drive after you've had one DWI, you have to pay for that interlock device, and then we can spot check you. We could put the little tag on your driver's license if we ever find you driving a vehicle without an interlock device, or you know, they do the biweekly download on them, and you've jerry-rigged them somehow or doing anything, then we can deal with you accordingly on that. Has there been any thought about doing that?
Well, I think in the contents or the context of the discussions that I had, both whether it's interlock, whether it's an ankle bracelet, whether it's the cost of the drug court program itself, what we're doing is basically what the circuit court is already doing, and that is allowing the court to assess those costs to the defendant. I think the circuit judges are in a better position to have better discretion to know when it's appropriate to require those things and require the defense to pay for it. My concern would be, if we mandate that in a statute, there's going to be a massive, massive cost with that that is going to stop this bill, and it's not, we're not going to get it anywhere. We're not going to get any of the changes that we need.
Well, no, you're going to make the defendant, if he or she wants to drive, pick up that cost as they do now whenever it's done. This whole bill is about taking discretion away from the courts.
Absolutely it's not.
Well, it's saying that you can no longer plead an SIS if you blow over 1.5. That takes discretion away from the court.
Unless you successfully complete a drug court program.
But I'm telling you, there are no drug court programs.
Yeah, there are. There's over 30 DWI courts, combination DWI and drug courts in the state of Missouri, and there's nine
standards. Okay, is a drug court a DWI court?
Yeah, and we allow that in the bill.
You allow that, but do you know it's going to happen?
Well, we're certainly encouraging the courts to do that, and we're giving the courts the discretion to make that happen.
Well,
but again, we're not giving them a ton of money because we don't have the money to give them, but we give them the discretion to tax the defendants to help pay for those programs. But obviously, it's always a balance. Are we going to try and get defendants treatment and keep them off the road as drunk drivers? Or, as you said, are we going to incarcerate everybody and simply have to pay for that? Or are we simply going to take their licenses away and not give them
treatment? I'm trying to get my hands around this 1.5. If you blow 0.15, that somehow you can't do an SIS unless you successfully complete a DWI court, which out of the 30 that you were handed the text message on, I would imagine the vast majority of those are drug courts that have not actually been converted over to a DWI court.
Right, but we do have training. There's a training requirement in here. In fact, there is a $15,500 fiscal note on the first year for this bill, in large part for the training requirement for the municipal judges who don't already have it, and the circuit judges that don't already have it, on how to handle those cases. And so, again, there is an attempt here to combine the DWI courts and the drug courts.
Well, there are no DWI or drug courts that are on the municipal level, are there?
No, not that I'm aware of.
I'm not aware of those either. So what is the training?
Because on the appropriate cases, the municipal courts could send those cases to the circuit court, so that a defendant would be eligible for DWI court.
Well, I'm just trying to look here from a practical standpoint. You get a Cape Girardeau police officer They offer you a, it's your first offense. They offer you a suspended imposition, and usually you just pay double the normal fine to get the SIS. Now, that's the criminal side. The administrative side, which I would respectfully submit to you as the harsher punishment, is you've got your mandatory hard walk, which you can't get a limited permit on the administrative side, and then you've got your remaining time where you can get a limited permit for it. Am I missing that?
No.
Is that my correct
no,
understanding?
No, I think that's correct.
Where I'm trying to get my hands wrapped around is, what is the public policy justification for taking the, if you blow 0.15 and it's your first offense, taking that out of the discretion of the court? Because, I mean, listen, I don't know that, and I don't have any scientific data to do this, it's just my hunch, that 0.08 and 0.15, you're drunk. You know, I mean, it's your first one. What I'm trying to avoid, Senator, is we've got some people that are just going to be destitute when they get this, and you can't get an SIS. How many people are we, you know, not even going to give a second chance to? You know, I I've been here. I've probably got one of the most militant prosecutors in the entire state of Missouri in Cape County that gave his wife a speeding ticket and brings that up every campaign as a reason to vote for him. But at some point, I don't know, you know, where that balance is. So I'm help me.
Well, I think
I'm just,
it's a matter,
I'm just
I think
trying
it's a matter
to,
of public policy. What we're saying is, you know, for somebody who, you know, has, you know, two beers and gets pulled over and blows a .08, that is a different circumstance.
Is that what it usually is? Say a guy that weighs 165 pounds, 5'8", two beers, am I going to blow .08?
I wouldn't that, know, but I think there's a distinction between somebody
that doesn't
who
have psoriasis of the liver.
Psoriasis or cirrhosis?
Cirrhosis
blows
of the liver.
An 08 or a .10.
It doesn't itch. It doesn't
itch. That's right. You get some Tegrin for that, I think.
It is.
Sell some blue, I think. Is what
exactly.
Again, I think the idea is that somebody who blows a .15 is somebody who indicates that they have more of a problem and are in more need of substance abuse treatment, as opposed to somebody who maybe...
Even if it's their first one.
Yes.
Even if it's their first one. That's the testimony that you've heard and conclusion that you've reached.
Yes.
Okay. But we're going to give them sort of a get-out-of-the-jail-free card if they go to the DWI court.
Well, I don't think I'd categorize it as a get-out-of-jail-free card. I think I would categorize it as getting them treatment so they don't drive drunk again. And again, you know, the Supreme Court has some very compelling data that shows that the recidivism rate is very, very low for people who go through a DWI court or a drug
and
court,
and
as
I
opposed
understand
to
that.
Somebody who just gets their license pulled.
I understand that. What I'm trying to look at is the 0.15 threshold and the public policy behind that on why we would basically take away that SIS at 0.15. And I'm just trying to say, to me, if we're going to say we don't want to drive while intoxicated, and maybe it's just because I don't have the scientific understanding of what the body's cognitive abilities are at 0.08 versus 0.15, I mean, have we got any studies on that? I mean, I'm grasping at what is the public policy distinction. Well, what is the miracle number of 0.15?
I don't think it's a miracle number, but I think that the testimony that we heard is that is a reasonable demarcation line between somebody who may just have had a few drinks in driving as opposed to somebody who is more... exemplary of a drinking problem.
Yeah, but just 5 years ago, I think the intoxication standard was 0.10.
That's correct.
In Missouri, so I'm trying to get, you know, every year that I've been here, we've passed a strengthening of DWIs, and every year then we come back and we say, you know, it's just not working. And I, too, do not want people driving intoxicated on the streets. But I also want some kind of rational understanding that we're not constantly just running around here passing laws that don't work. So I don't know
that a 0.15 is the demarcation line for that is any more arbitrary than a 0.08 is for DWI in the first place as opposed to a 0.10. At some point, there has to be some exercise of professional judgment, and not everyone is going to be the same, but you have to make some generalizations.
But is that better left to the courts, the prosecutors, to determine than us?
Let me ask you, Senator. Do you have a problem with the bill in general?
No, I don't. I'm trying to get an understanding. I mean, believe me, I haven't dropped
this for months. I'd be happy to sit down with you and
this is the first time that I've seen this.
Okay.
This bill. So, this is the first time. And all I'm trying to do is to go through it. If I wanted to kill your bill, I would have had 15 amendments dropped on it, and I'd be offering those one at a time. I'm trying to get an honest discussion of what is the empirical hope, understanding, how is this going to make Missouri a greater place by having this 0.15 that you can't get an SIS anymore? When just 5 years ago, the legal intoxication standard was 0.10.
Because if you blow a 0.15, you are showing that you have more of a propensity to drink more and drive than maybe somebody who just has a couple of drinks and goes out. You pose a greater threat. And the public policy reason behind this bill is to get those people out. So when you and your wife and your kids get in the minivan and go down a two-lane road with no shoulder, you're not going to encounter that guy who's going to blow up.
But what is the data that says
0.15 is the incentive of not giving an SIS is an incentive to get them into the treatment program. Otherwise, if they can get an SIS, they're going to do it every damn day they can, and they're never going to get the treatment they need. And all we're going to do is either let them keep driving, or we're going to pull their license, and they're going to drive drunk without a license and continue to pose the public safety threat they pose. But, Senator, let me tell you this.
Where did 1.5 come from?
I'm going to lay this over. If we can sit down, if you and I can sit down and talk about what your concerns are with this bill, because I think we need to get this bill through. I think it's important for the public safety of all citizens of the state of Missouri. So if you will commit to me that we can discuss this, and I'm more than willing to address your concerns so we can bring this back out before the end of the week.
I appreciate it. I want to know where the 0.15 standard came from. I would like to know more in depth about these DWI courts and your ability to have, if you are so fortunate, a jurisdiction that has a DWI court versus a jurisdiction that does not have a DWI court. I was going to inquire of the senator from Jackson 10th about that provision on page 12 and 13.
Well, let's do this, Senator. I'm going to go ahead and lay it over, and then you and I can have a discussion on what we're going to do, and I would certainly encourage the senator from the 10th, who is very instrumental in this bill, to join us in that discussion.
Mr. President.
Senator from Boone.
Will you please lay that bill over?
That bill will be placed on the informal calendar. Senator from St. Francis.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, could we have messages from the House? Or are we going to go to the order of business reports from standing committee so that we do get some bills in? Let's go to the order of business reports from standing committee.
Reports of standing committees. Senator from Buchanan.
Senator from St. Clair, give a report.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Financial and Governmental Organizations and Elections Committee has a report.
Send it forward. Madam Secretary, read the report when it arrives.
Mr. President, your Committee on Financial and Governmental Organizations and Elections, to which was referred House Committee Substitute for House Joint Resolution 64, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute here to attach do pass. Also, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1966 begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute here to attach do pass. Also, House Joint Resolution 78 begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the joint resolution do pass. Respectfully, Senator Scott, Chairman.
Sir, from Franklin.
Mr. President, your committee on jobs, economic development, and local government has a report.
Send it forward. Madam Secretary, read it when it arrives.
Mr. President, your Committee on Jobs, Economic Development, and Local Government, to which was referred House Bill 1444, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute here to attach do pass. Respectfully, Senator Griesheimer, Chairman.
Senator from the 8th.
Thank you, Mr. President. Judiciary Committee has a report. I'll send it forward.
Send it forward. Madam Secretary, read the report when it arrives.
Mr. President, your Committee on Judiciary and Civil and Criminal Jurisprudence, to which was referred House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1400, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute here to attach do pass. Respectfully, Senator Bartle, Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on General Laws has a report.
Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on General Laws, to which was referred House Committee Substitute for House Bill 2058, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute here to attach do pass. Also, House Joint Resolution 62 begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the joint resolution do pass. Also, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1787.
Whoa.
Three bills?
Just only have two.
1787 wasn't on the
list. Send that last one back. Senator from the second.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a report from the Small Business Insurance and Industry.
Send it forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Small Business Insurance and Industry, to which was referred House Bill 2205, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute here to attach do pass. Also, House Bill 2290 begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Respectfully, Senator Roop, Chairman.
Senator from Andrew.
Mr. President, I have a report.
Send it forward.
It is on its way forward to the outstanding folks surrounding the Secretary of the Senate.
Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Commerce, Consumer Protection, Energy, and the Environment, to which was referred House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1871, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute here to attach do pass. Respectfully, Senator Lager, Chairman.
Senator from Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a report.
Send the report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Education, to which was referred House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1473, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute here to attach do pass. Respectfully, Senator Pierce, Chairman.
Senator from St. Francis.
Thank you, Mr. President. Could you take us, I tell you what, Mr. President, can I inquire of you?
State your inquiry.
Since everybody's asking me what the plans are.
What are the plans?
Would you like to know what the plans are?
I'm waiting with bated breath.
I bet. The senator from Nottoway has got a bill that we're going to that's the first on the formal calendar. No, the senator from Jasper has got that bill. I don't even know what it is, but we've got to take it up, and hopefully it's a good one and gets off quick. Then we're going to go to the education bill from the senator from Johnson, which we hopefully can get that done. If we can get that done before the governor's little event, we're not coming back. If we don't, we'll be back here until we get that bill done. And that's the current plan. So, Mr. President, if you could take us to the formal calendar for House bills for third reading. Formal calendar,
House bills for third reading, formal calendar. House bill what? House bill 1316, Senator from Jasper.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 1316 be taken up.
Heard the motion, Senator from Jasper. All those pending that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
All those contrary say no. Ayes per to have it. Ayes do have it. Bill's for the body. Senator from Jasper.
Mr. President, I would now move the adoption of the Senate Committee Substitute. This underlying bill is identical to Senate Bill 588, which we already sent to the governor, that allows for a delay of the implementation of the assessment notices until the software is sent out to the counties. There are three sections that have been added that all are identical in nature to language that was added to Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 1424. And then there's a section that's identical to language that was in House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 686. And then there's another section identical to language that was included in Senate Bill 102. Be happy to respond to any questions.
Senator from Jasper has moved the adoption of Senate Committee Substitute. Any senator seek recognition? Senator from second.
Mr. President,
you seek recognition?
I have an amendment.
Send your amendment forward. Has it been distributed?
It has been distributed. I'd ask for a waiver of the reading.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move for its adoption for the body's knowledge. It is 05.02S. This is an amendment that I've put on 217 bills so far this session. 217. It deals with the allowing a one-time change of hearing officer as you're appearing before the State Tax Commission. So if you have a conflict at one time, you can request to have a hearing officer change. That's all it does. I'll gladly answer any questions, and I'll renew my motion.
Senator, for second, is moved for adoption. Senate Amendment Number 1. Does any senator seek recognition on that motion? Senator from Andrew, what purpose do you seek recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to inquire of the senator from the second.
Senator from second, you yield?
I yield.
Yields, proceed.
Okay. What are you trying to sneak through in the final week?
This is a very, very, very key amendment here that will unravel state government as we know it.
And this has been passed out.
We passed this on many, many bills that passed out here last year. Consent just didn't make it through. It just says if you have a conflict and you're appearing before the State Tax Commission, you can at one time request a change of hearing officer up on your appeal. In my county, a lot of times people are getting the same one over and over and over. Just allows them to do a one-time change of a hearing officer.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from Andrew.
I'd like to inquire the senator from Jasper.
Does the senator from Jasper yield?
I yield.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. You did a great job explaining what bill numbers are now part of this bill number, but unfortunately, I don't have all the bill numbers, the material in the bill numbers memorized.
All right. You should have. Are you just trying to kill time here? Okay.
I'm slow.
All right. Section 52.230 allows county collectors to refuse to accept payment for property taxes if the payment is not accompanied by a statement sent to the taxpayer. That basically is to deal with primarily mortgage holders who bundle up the tax statements for like 100 properties, and they send a
check in and they don't identify which dollars go to which.
Where goes where.
And this allows the assessor to refuse unless the dollars are tied to the specific assessment notice.
That's pretty easy.
Second section allows Jefferson County to continue to collect 7% fee on delinquent taxes. That's the senator
22nd.
from 22nd could explain that. I think he's put that on a couple of other bills earlier. 52.361 allows first and second counties to receive and disperse funds electronically. 54.010 allows the collector treasurer to continue to do the same job for the same pay if a township county becomes a third or fourth class county.
Got it.
And then, of course, 137 is the underlying bill that we talked about earlier. 139.031 makes it clear that while a taxpayer is required to notify the county collector of a pending appeal of an assessment when paying property taxes, the failure to do so does not result in the dismissal of the appeal. So it protects taxpayers from having appeals unfairly dismissed.
Right.
And 140.050 section makes technical changes to the process of selling property to collect delinquent property taxes, increasing the notice requirements to comply with a recent case law. So it's to bring statutes into compliance with the ruling. And 184.50 creates the Kansas City Zoological District as in SB 102. And then 246.310 exempts drainage districts and levee districts from 262.802 relating to the abeyance of water and sewer assessments. And that's it.
Okay. Those seem pretty harmless, I think. Senator, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on Senate Amendment 1? Sir. Senator from Cape, for purpose D.C. recognition.
To inquire the senator from Jasper.
Does the senator from Jasper yield?
I yield.
He does. Proceed.
I'm looking at the original House committee substitute for House Bill 1316. Is that, I assume that's still in the bill here? You didn't change that in any measurable way?
I think that's right. These are just additions.
Okay. And then you went over those additions with the senator from
Andrew.
DeKalb.
One of those counties.
Davies, Livingston, Lynn. We'll say he's from Lynn today. So the senator from Lynn, and you discussed all of those things. I'm just trying to catch up here real quick. I don't see anything in here on the tax stacking issue.
No.
Am I correct
on
that?
No, nothing on tax stacking. But I know you're vigilant about that.
So. I am vigilant and appreciate your candidness and cooperation to that end very much, Senator.
I think that would be beyond the scope and title of this bill.
Okay. And then this Kansas City Zoological District is there. And what's your understanding of the senator from the Second Amendment?
Oh, the one he just did?
Yeah. Well, we're still on it. He hasn't done it yet.
Or the one he's working on?
The one he offered.
It's, let's see, do I have the amendment here in front of me? We've debated this several times.
We've done this already.
We've done it several, we just did it
relating
late
to
last
property
week,
taxes.
Actually. It just allows a hearing officer, a change of a hearing officer
option. Okay. All right, fair enough. It just took me a little while to be able to flip through all of the pages. I appreciate it, Senator. Thank you very much.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the amendment? Hearing none, Senator, you are Senator from the 4th, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
To inquire with the Senator from Jasper.
Senator from the 4th, hold on just a moment, please. Senator from Jasper, yield.
I yield.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you. I didn't see that amendment.
The one that the senator from Second has offered? Or last week?
I'm sorry, this is it here? It ends in O2S?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. J- just be patient with me. Okay. No, I'm good with this. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
Senator from the 24th, what purpose do you seek recognition?
May I inquire the senator from the second?
Does the senator from the second yield?
I yield.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, is this your amendment?
Yes.
Oh, okay. And I've got, I saw two amendments on my desk.
One was for this bill, and I think one is for the education bill.
For another bill. Okay. Okay. So this one is?
The one-time change of hearing officer. If you have a conflict, if you're appealing before the state tax commission, you can at one time request a change. We've passed it on at least a dozen bills, probably, and it passed out of here last year as well.
Did it get, what happened last year?
Just, I think it just didn't make it through the process with time. I think it was a consent bill.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Well, I'm hoping I can find that, because that's, you know, language. I'm just, every time you do it, it's just such lovely language. I just need to read it over and over and over again, because it's so perfect. Oh, thank you, Senator. Thank you. Okay. And this is, the hearing officer is where?
Before the state tax commission.
Before the state tax commission. And it's a one, you get one time,
yep.
one chance. Was there something particular that caused?
Yeah, in my county, they were just continually getting the same person over and over and over. And they just said, hey, you know, we have a long standing with, can we just get somebody new? And this would just say, or if you had a personal conflict, if you're related or something.
Was it the same outcome over and over?
I think it probably was.
Okay. Okay. Well, Senator, that's that I appreciate knowing a little bit more about that.
Sure.
And I thank you for lending me your copy
no
of the
problem.
Amendment. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on the amendment? Hearing none, Senator, you're recognized. Close.
Mr. President.
Senator from the second has renewed his motion for the adoption of Senate Amendment 1. As many of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted Senate Amendment 1. Does any other senator desire to be senator from the 11th? For what purpose do you seek recognition?
Mr. President, I have an amendment.
Please send the amendment forward.
Mr. President, I believe it has been distributed. It is 01S. I would ask for unanimous consent to waive the reading.
Hearing no objection to the waiver of the reading, Senator, proceed.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the amendment. Mr. President, this is the Missouri Homestead tax credit that the Missouri Homestead Preservation Act passed by this body 5 years ago. It provides property tax relief to those 65 and older. The current program, Mr. President, expires in June of this year. It has been appropriated in this year's budget, and this amendment merely extends the sunset to August 28, 2013. And this tax credit is subject to appropriation in the current system, and this simply extends the date and does not change that underline. And I'd be happy to yield to any questions.
The senator from the 11th has moved for the adoption of Senate Amendment 2. Senator from Cape, for what purpose do you seek recognition?
Thank you, Mr. President, to inquire the senator from the 11th.
I yield, Mr.
Senator
President.
From the 11th yield. He does. Proceed.
Thank you for yielding, Senator. How did you pick August 28, 2013?
There was no magic to it, Senator. I mean,
okay.
I'm happy. I knew that you would have a concern,
sure.
as all tax credits. However, I believe in this year's budget, money has been appropriated. I believe the former senator from St. Charles, who started this. It is a tax credit that is subject to appropriation.
Right.
And I understand your genuine concern, and I knew that I would probably
But
there is no magic
that.
To that. Again, with the subject to appropriation, I believe, which is in the status quo, you know, this is a yearly decision anyway.
Yeah, I need
And I believe in the current budget, we have money
there. I just didn't know if the body was unaware. I was unaware until about 2 months ago, Senator, that it expired. But in answer to your question, there is no magic to 2013.
Okay.
If you want to have me change it to next year, I mean...
I wanted to know if there was any magic behind that and appreciate that. I'm trying. I had
one reason, Senator, was in answer to your question. 1 year, the only disadvantage is I didn't want to have to do this every year.
Right. Okay. I'm going to read. I had Brian Schmidt kind of put together a memo on the homestead preservation tax credit. This is separate and apart from the circuit breaker.
Correct.
Tax break.
And you were, Senator, I believe, in the House when the former senator from St. Charles passed this in 2004.
Yeah.
I believe my first year in the world. Senate in 2004 was when this passed.
Right. We're in a different world. It says here that who is eligible, and let me just ask you this. To make sure our understanding is the same. Who is eligible? Senior citizen taxpayers who realize an increase in their property tax liability of more than 5% in a reassessment year, the difference between the taxpayer's property tax bill in an odd-numbered year and the previous even-numbered year, and more than 2.5% in a non-reassessment year, the difference between the taxpayer's property tax bill in an even-numbered year and the previous odd-numbered year are eligible to receive the homestead preservation tax credit if they have a federal adjusted gross income of $77,254 or below.
For married couples, I believe.
Yeah. No, it just says an eligible taxpayer. This income limit is adjusted each year according to the increase in the general price level over the previous year. Eligible taxpayers must be 65 or older if single, or if married, one of the spouses must be 65 and the other spouse must be at least 62 or disabled. Also, if married, the spouses must have an income of less than the amount previously specified. So it's for an individual or a married couple, but the income threshold is $77,254 this year. Is that pretty much your understanding of that as well? Okay. And then this memo goes on and says, what is the amount of the credit? Senate Bill 711 from the 2008 legislative session made a change in which applications that are filed between December 31st, 2008 and December 31st, 2011. The value of the credit is based on the increase in tax liability from the base year to the year prior to the application. The term base year is defined the year prior to the first year in which the eligible owner's application was approved, or 2006, whichever is later. For applications filed after January 1, 2012, it shall be based on the increase from 2 years prior to the application to the year immediately preceding the application, as long as these increases are greater than 5% threshold in reassessment years and the 2.5% threshold in non-reassessment years. The amount of the credit is the amount of the eligible taxpayer's property tax liability that exceeds these thresholds. That's what the amount of the credit is. Now, I don't know how much, do you know how much we ended up expending or we've appropriated this year for this?
Senator, my information, and I believe is $800,000.
Okay, so that's what we expended last year, or we appropriated for this year?
I believe we appropriated for this year.
Okay,
but I want that to be accurate, but
sure,
not on appropriate.
Yeah, and we're going to try to get all of that information this year.
And Senator, the reality
is, and I think the reason that this